Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Neo-Etymology Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, here's a letter from Barbara Reeves, who says, "Guys, I want you to explain something. Today on your show..." You know, this has been sitting on my pile of mail for 3 months.
Oh, really? Just 3 months?
"Today on your show, you used a word that seemed to be wonderfully useful. Schnurdling."
Aha, yes.
"As I live in a household of boys, I always find it helpful to have new words in the broad lexicon of bathroom activities. Please explain the meaning and usage of schnurdling, as I'm sure it will come in handy sooner or later. Thanks, Barbara."
Well, it's interesting that she figured out it has something to do with the bathroom. Right? Yeah. I guess the context must have given
that
away.
I wonder what we said. Never mind.
Well, look, I can tell you the exact moment that the word schnurdling entered the English language. You and Dougie and I, Tommy, were flying to Iceland because we were working on a Nova program called The Car of the Future.
Incidentally, that show is airing this week on Nova, if you're interested.
What if I'm not interested?
It's still airing this week on Nova.
Anyway, we fly overnight to Iceland. We take the red eye or whatever it is.
Blue eye. It's blue up there.
We stuff ourselves on elk sushi and lutefisk. And most importantly, we pure Icelandic glacier spring water. What could be better than that?
Yeah.
So by the time we land and get off the plane in Reykjavik, we need to make a pit stop, as people often do when they get off a plane. So we step off the jetway and start looking for a men's room. And, of course, all of the signs are in what? Viking.
Whatever that language is up there.
Finally, somebody points to a sign that has the universal symbol of somebody wearing pants, you know, and the sign that says, I think it says, schnurdling.
Well, it turns out it didn't actually say schnurdling. It said snaredling.
Well, but forevermore, it was schnurdling. So the facilities themselves are the schnurdling. You have to go to the schnurdling, right?
Yeah.
But you can also take a schnurdling if you drink too much Icelandic glacial spring water.
Well, Barbara, I hope you found that useful.
I'm sure all of America did. Anyway, if you've got a problem with your car or your schnurdling, for that matter, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Jenny, and I'm calling from Carmel, New York.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Where is Carmel, New York?
It's just west of Danbury, Connecticut, just over the line.
Right.
Oh.
Yes, I've been there. I had friends that used to live in Carmel, New York.
Who, Carmel?
Yes.
No kidding.
It's a nice place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not very exciting, but yeah, it's nice.
Well, that's why he moved. No. Anyway, what's up, Jenny?
All right, I drive a 99 Volkswagen Cabrio.
Uh-huh.
And it is my most favorite car thus far, except it seems to really enjoy taking water on.
Uh-huh.
And my problem is that whenever it rains, I get in my car and my seatbelt will give me a wet shoulder. And there's no water that I can see leaking in inside of the car, and it doesn't look as though any of the seals are, you know, open on the roof. But I know that water is getting in where my seatbelt winds up down in the bottom of that side panel there.
Isn't that a bummer?
Because the belt is all wet.
Yeah. And then it gets my shoulder wet, and then my shirt's all wet.
So you show up for work, and they say, oh, Jesus, Jenny again. Oh, man, what an embarrassment she is.
Well, I mean, can't you just buy a rain jacket and wear it?
It gets kind of hard in the summertime, though, you know.
Yeah,
well, in the summer, you wouldn't even care. Would cool you down.
You've got the top down. What do you care, right? I mean, water comes into places that don't look like they're letting water in.
Right.
You know, and the seal between the top and the doors, the seal between the door frame and the door, all of those places are areas where water can come in. And the only way you're going to figure this out is to take it someplace where they will apply the hose to it.
Yeah, and they'll find it in a minute.
And they'll see the water coming in.
See, I've had convertibles all my life, and every one of them leaked constantly.
To such an extent that he stopped putting the tops up. Figured, why bother, right?
Well, the solution to it was a giant hole in the floor.
That's what my dad suggested.
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Water comes in, and water goes out. And what do you care?
Well, you know what you care? Because after a while, when the top is up and water's in, you start growing some awful stuff in there.
That's my fear.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have a moldy seatbelt that smells bad, and then I'm wet and I smell bad.
I mean, it is an awful stuff if you are an amphibian, you know. So if you were a tadpole, you'd like that smell.
Yeah.
Because it would smell like home. Well, now that I think of it, Tommy's car smells like home. But you probably have a door seal that's leaking.
You think that's what it is?
Yeah. So take it someplace, and they'll play the hose on it. And if need be, they'll put enough high-pressure water there, and they'll see the water coming in, and they'll replace the weather stripping.
No, I was thinking of just...
Yeah, duct tape.
No. duct tape I didn't think would last very long, but I was thinking of just hosing it down myself and possibly pulling off that inside panel and watching to see where the water comes in.
Excellent idea.
Okay.
So you're going to need an assistant.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's what you're going to need. You're going to need an assistant.
Uh-huh.
A bathing suit.
A hose.
Right. A hose, right, with a high-pressure nozzle on it, you know.
Right.
So you can really direct the water into a fine, you know, spray. Not a spray, but a stream, rather.
Right.
And then you need a bright flashlight.
Right.
Yeah, or you can do it yourself. And then you'll know the general area, and then you can take it and get it fixed.
Right, because I'll have to replace the seal, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But it'll be fun figuring it out.
Right, yes. And that's what a convertible's all about.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
Is right.
And when you give up like my brother, though, you said 99, or you got another 5 years before it gets into the category of most of his cars. And then you can leave the top down forever.
5 years? 25.
See you, Jenny.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, Tom and Ray. This is Barnaby. I'm calling from Oakland, California.
Hi, Barnaby.
Barnaby. Oakland?
Oakland.
Yes,
Barnaby,
sir.
I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone named Barnaby.
Well, you saved it up for the right guy.
Evidently.
Yeah. What's a good name.
Do you have a nickname, or you must use the whole name, right?
Well, a lot of people call me Barn. My family calls me Barn O for some reason.
Barn O.
I guess I'm the sixth Marx brother.
So what's up?
Well, I got in my wife's car a couple weeks ago, started it up, heard a horrible noise, sounded terribly dangerous. I drove it right to the shop.
Uh-huh.
They gave it the good old auditory diagnostic.
Yeah.
And said, you know, it's really not a serious problem. It's just part of your exhaust system is making this noise. So we could charge you several billion dollars to replace your whole exhaust system.
Or you could get
out of here, take it to the muffler shop. Maybe they'll weld something together. It'll be okay. Or it's not serious. You can just live with the noise.
Uh-huh.
But I want a second opinion because I don't understand if it's an exhaust problem. Why does it seem to happen when I put my foot onto the clutch at disengaging the gears?
Oh.
So when you start it up, it does not make the noise?
It'll make it when I start the car cold.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I start moving, it only happens when I put my foot on the clutch. And once I stop moving, putting my foot on the clutch doesn't do anything. Revving the engine doesn't do anything. If I'm sitting there in neutral, it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen, but you could probably make it happen if you played with the gas enough.
Yeah, I probably could.
This a Subaru?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
It is.
Give that man a cigar.
How'd you do that?
Just a wag, as they say. Well, it sounds like the reason they sent you away is that these cars, these late model Subarus, actually the early ones too, had problems with the sheet metal that wraps around the exhaust system coming loose. And these heat shields are designed to keep the underside of the car from catching fire or from setting leaves on fire. Every car has them, but Subaru seems to have had a problem designing heat shields that stay put.
Yeah.
And when the little welds begin to break, what happens is you get this rattling sound. And when you're revving the engine and then you step on the clutch, you change the dynamics because the engine had been, you know, reacting to the movement of the vehicle, and the engine was twisting in one direction, and now you step on the clutch and you interrupt that flow of power from the engine to the wheels. The engine kind of relaxes and goes back on the motor mounts, and you get the rattling noise.
And so you could take it
someplace and have somebody spot weld. This is what we do. We spot weld the heat shields.
Okay.
And try to get them. Sometimes we clamp them, or you could live with it.
Right.
And you can live with it until the heat shield in question falls off.
Yeah.
So these guys did not give you bad advice.
No, They're a great dealership, and I was thrilled to get the advice because I didn't really want to spend the money.
Yeah,
but after taking it home, driving it home, I just couldn't wrap my head around why it was presenting in that way.
So how old a Subaru is this?
It's 12 years old.
Oh, what do you want?
Well, they gave you this advice because they know sooner or later you'll be back for the entire exhaust system. And that's going to cost a few bucks.
Yeah. Well, when the time comes, that's what we'll do.
Well, good luck, Barnaby.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Evan. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
E-V-A-N?
E-V-Y-N.
E-V-Y-N.
The Y makes it girly.
Oh.
Does make it girly. Whose idea was this? Your mother's or your father's?
My mother, my mother.
Is she a wacko usually?
No, your name might have been Evelyn, huh?
No, never Evelyn. I don't think she likes that name.
She doesn't? Well, that's why she didn't give it to you.
I know that I'm named after my grandmother, Eva.
Eva,
so, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And why didn't they just name you Eva?
You know, I'll ask her.
Well, thanks for calling, Evan.
Anyway, what's going on?
So I drive a 1996 Nissan pickup, and it's a great little truck. I bought it in 2002 with 80,000 miles on it, and I've driven it all over the country and never had any trouble.
Oh.
And then recently, in January, the transmission and the clutch went at the same time. It just died. And I was living in Chicago, and I needed to get back to Oregon, and so I just spent the money and fixed it.
Oh.
And now it doesn't feel like the gears are quite engaging. Probably for the first hour that I drive the car, it sort of feels like, it goes forward, but it sort of goes forward really slowly.
Oh, so you feel like something's holding you back.
Yes.
And if you were to take your foot off the gas in the mid-acceleration, so let's say you're accelerating from 0 to 20 miles an hour, and somewhere in the midst of that, ordinarily you would do that, then you'd step
totally
on the clutch.
It rattles. The car just, starts to shake.
It rattles, okay. But,
yeah.
But if you were to take your foot off the gas when it's doing this rattling, would the car slow down considerably, or would it just slow down at a normal rate
slows down at a normal rate.
Okay. All right. Because for a while, I figured that even though we just met, I thought that maybe
it was your fault. Tell him the truth.
Well, I did. No. I assumed that it was your fault. I assumed that you had left the emergency brake on, or it was sticking.
No, I've totally done that before, but that's not it.
And you know what that feels like? And that feels like you have no power.
Yeah.
It feels like as soon as you take your foot off the gas, someone's pulling your rear bumper off.
Yeah, no, that's a different feeling than this. Yeah.
She knows that.
So this is shaking and rattling.
Yes.
Okay.
And then what?
Then what happens, yeah.
Then usually if I put it into second gear or third gear, it will do the same thing, feel tight for maybe 30 seconds. And then it feels like it jerks forward into the gear, and then it's fine.
So it almost seems like the gear is not working.
Yeah.
It sounds to us like the clutch is not working.
No, not to us. It sounds to this moron. It's to me. to me, it sounds like the engine isn't working correctly.
Oh, no.
Let me clarify one thing. When it's doing this, your foot is all the way off the clutch?
Absolutely.
When you come to a stop, do you feel that the engine runs very smoothly? Somewhat?
No, it started to idle really funny, and I keep feeling when I'm at stoplights, if it's in neutral,
it's
idling
funny.
Like
is it laughing when it's idling? Saying, Evan, you're going to spend $2,500.
It absolutely is laughing at me.
So now, you're going to wait till later on in the call, or are you going to tell us now that the check engine light's been on for 3 months?
It has been on for 3 months.
Well, there you go.
3 months. He hit it right on the money.
Well, the check engine light is telling you there's something wrong, and I guarantee you it's telling the computer to tell you that there's an engine misfire.
When it went on the first time, I was in Oklahoma City, and I had a guy check it out, and he said that it had to do with my oxygen sensor.
Well, there you go. Uh-huh. You could need an O2 sensor.
And then he said not to worry about it, that it wouldn't leave me stranded.
It won't leave you stranded, but it'll do this.
It'll make you run like crud.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it what it's doing, the oxygen sensor, if it's sending the wrong signal to the computer, is changing the mixture in a manner that isn't consistent with what the vehicle needs to warm the engine up.
Okay.
And you've got to fix it, because in addition to polluting the air.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. So you're polluting the air and you're also making the engine run inefficiently. You're burning more gas than you should, and you're running the risk of damaging the catalytic converter.
Okay.
So you've got to fix it.
All right.
All right.
I'll do that. I also, real quick, I have to tell you that my mom made me promise that I would let you guys know that she is from Wollaston, Massachusetts, and she's been listening to you since the first time you aired.
Has
wow,
she?
What a woman.
Jeez.
She actually suggested that I call you.
So we must even know where Wollaston is.
She must be older than Tommy, right?
No.
She's not.
Well, that's nice to hear. Thanks, Evan.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks
Good
to
luck.
Your mom. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, it's time for us to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to have the answer to our most recent puzzler.
Which was about what?
It was about 2 sticks of dynamite.
Oh, was this a cosmetics puzzler? Because I remember when they were doing the makeup for the Nova special, they called a guy over to powder your nose, and he asked if anyone had any gunpowder.
No, I wasn't using the dynamite on my nose. It was a puzzler about a pair of fuses that burned at 2 different rates. And I'll have the whole story.
And we'll take more of your phone calls in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
You should talk about noses. What a nose you got.
In my town, there's a lot of empty streets. Full but empty, if you know what I mean. I'm an ice-peeled lookout with my feet on the floor. Ever since you cut my parachute cord. Was that your Subaru? I wonder. Was that your Subaru? Was it red? Was that your Subaru? I wonder. Was that your Subaru?
And even though marathoners turn mid-race and start running away from Boston whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to our most recent puzzler.
Mm.
And this was from my High Explosive series, and it was submitted by a fellow named Paco Jane.
Yeah.
Do you remember those old westerns on TV where the bad guys would try to blast the door off the bank vault with dynamite?
Yeah.
Remember those? You're probably in a few of them, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, they would strategically locate the explosives and then light a long fuse and run to a safe place to duck for cover until the thing blew.
Yeah.
Well, this is about those kinds of fuses.
Good.
Imagine that you have 2 lengths of fuse just like that, and each one takes exactly 1 hour to burn. But here's the interesting part. The fuses don't burn in a linear manner. They get to that 1 hour erratically.
Uh-huh.
So let's say a fuse is a foot long. It might take 40 minutes for the first inch to burn, and then only 20 minutes for the next 11 inches to burn. You can't tell how much time you have left just by looking at it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And both fuses burn differently. So all you know is that the fuses each take 1 hour to burn completely.
Yeah.
Now, you got that?
I got it.
Using only these 2 fuses and a lighter, how do you measure 45 minutes?
Looking at your watch.
You know, call your cell phone.
Or your cell phone. I mean,
or you
just
call
because
somebody.
You got fuses doesn't mean you got to use them.
That's right. Well, if you didn't have any of that stuff, how would you do it?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, here's what you do. You light 3 ends at the same time, or as close to the same time as you possibly can.
Oh.
Right? So you light, obviously, 2 ends of 1 fuse. And
already
you light,
that's very clever.
And 1 end of the other fuse.
Yeah.
When the first fuse has both ends are lit.
Yeah.
When that has completely burned up, that's 1/2 hour.
It is?
Well, sure. If it took 1 hour to burn from A to be from the end, one end to the other end. If you light both ends, the whole fuse will be consumed in half an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. In the meantime, that other fuse has been burning.
Yeah.
If as soon as the first fuse is burned up completely,
yeah,
you light the last end. Okay. So you've used up a half an hour, and now it takes another 15 minutes.
For the newly lit end
to catch up to the originally lit end, and voila.
Boy, that is very good.
Interesting. You can also measure 15 minutes. What you would do very simply, say, let's say you had to cook something that took 15 minutes. You would light the fuses in the same way I described,
except
you wouldn't start counting until you lit the fourth end.
Right.
And that would be your 15 minutes.
Exactly. I love it.
Right? So you can do 15 minutes that way, but you can measure 45 minutes, which is what we asked for.
A very clever
solution. It is. Do we have a winner?
No.
There may be other solutions involving wristwatches. I don't know, but who's our winner?
Yeah, we do have a winner, actually. The winner this week is Becky Sallen from Lunenburg, Vermont. And for having her answer selected at random from the pile of correct answers that we got, Becky is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which Becky can get one of our sleek-looking, not really, no, black, red, gray, and white baseball jerseys.
Do you have one of these?
I do. It's in my car as we speak.
You use it to check the oil, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I checked the transmission fluid, and boy, does the thing stink now.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so stay tuned for that. And in between now and then, if you have a question about your car, we're ready for you at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Pete from Larkspur, California.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
From where?
Larkspur.
Yes,
Marin County.
Marin County, just north of Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes.
We've driven through it.
Been there.
Yes, on the way to Dougie's wedding.
That's right.
Right through it. A couple of times. We kept getting lost.
How many times has he been married?
Only once. So what's going on, Pete?
Well, I'm hoping you can solve a bit of a dispute between my wife and myself. And it's about convertibles and car seats for kids.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
We're usually good at starting controversies between us and your wives. It's not about resolving
them. I'm not going to be any help to you at all, but that's all right. Go ahead.
I have a Jaguar XK8 convertible. As you know, in the back of those cars, there's a little bit of space for a couple of seats. I'd like to put a car seat in there for our 20-month-old toddler. But my wife, not surprisingly, is sort of a bit against the idea because she thinks that convertibles are sort of inherently less safe than her car, which is an old Toyota Land Cruiser.
How old?
1995. It's actually a car for our dog, which is a 160-pound Mastiff, so it's covered in hair and slobber and that sort of thing.
Great.
So the dog drives this car, or you drive the dog around in the Land Cruiser?
Yeah, he's pretty good, actually. He's not very good about which side of the road, but nor am I. So it's
This XK8 doesn't have a particularly spacious back seat.
No, it's tiny, but I think I can just about get a car seat in there. But but I mean, I can see what she's saying. That, you know, anything without a roof is going to be, I think, substantially less strong in an accident.
Well, are you a wacko driver?
I don't think so. No, I'm pretty good. I'm only talking about taking him down to the park or the beach, you know. It's not as if I'm going on the cross-country
road. Well, I'll tell you that mothers and fathers have a different relationship with their children, especially when the children are brand new.
Yeah.
The mother's feeling about the child is that no harm can come to this child because she's invested 9 months carrying this little guy around.
Yeah.
Guys, on the other hand, tend to look at children as like a new soccer ball. You know,
something to throw around,
something to be thrown in the back seat, and you know, and something to have fun with. But you don't have that same kind of maternal attachment. I'm sorry, you may be the father, and we may think that both parents are equivalent, but they are not. And so you can, I hope, understand why she's worried that something awful may happen. Maybe not related to you and your driving, but just the fact that the roof of the car is not there.
Yeah.
You know, or there's not a metal roof to the car, so she's afraid that like a satellite could come out of orbit and strike the child. You know, I think over time she'll adjust. I mean, I do think that the backseat of the thing is probably just as safe, if not safer, than her Land Cruiser.
Because of the difference in age?
Well, or? Because the Land Cruisers more have to tip over.
It would be very, very difficult to tip over the XK8.
Well, you know what she's worried about? That something tips you over. What if you get hit by a... What if you're in a multi-car accident?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right, so
yeah.
You're not going to tip it over by driving crazily, but you get broadsided, spun around, and tipped over.
Which can happen.
It can happen. The chances are pretty small, but it can happen. And, you know, so you could get a 3 Series BMW that has the pop-up roll bar.
Yeah, I'm not particularly wedded to the convertible, but, you know, I like the Jag, and if she's not going to be comfortable with it, I have to sell it, so it's a whole other...
Oh, yes.
Well, why can't, when you go on these little rides on Sunday morning, why can't you take the Land Cruiser?
Oh, yeah, I do. That's what I do right now, but if it's something where she needs that car, then I have to sort of wait till she comes back to take him anywhere, and sort of vice versa, really. So, you know, we're talking about an inconvenience here. It's nothing more substantial.
Exactly.
But you can't let the kid force you to get rid of your XK8. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I know, it's
kids are a dime
heart.
A dozen.
Well, I mean, I would give her... What if you could have the XK8 cared for by someone who really would love it and nurture it? And
I would do that.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll send it over.
Ship it over. Tommy will take care of it. He'll make sure no other creatures sleep in it except him. And when your child is old enough that he can ride in the front seat with you.
Yeah, 25, 30 years old.
I can have it back.
You'll get your XK.
I'll give it back.
Does that
sound
like a deal, Pete?
That sounds like a deal.
All right.
All right, thanks a lot.
We'll
anyway.
Send you the papers. See you later, man.
Cheers, thanks.
888.
That is an interesting conundrum, isn't it?
Well, you know, because mothers do worry more about their children than
as
fathers.
They probably should, yeah, because men are morons.
There you go. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kelly from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hi, Kelly.
How many E's in Kelly? One or two?
Just one.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
One.
I've never seen the first name have more than one E.
Yeah.
From Knoxville. What's going on, Kelly?
Well, I have a 2001 Volvo V70 Turbo.
Okay.
And when I start driving the car, everything's fine. But as soon as I use the brake for the first time, I get this, like, hissing noise. It sounds like there's a snake in the floorboard, and it's coming from, it seems like, the brake pedal.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I think I just started, like tapped on it a couple of times. And it seems like after I tap on it a few times, the hissing will go away.
Yes.
Until the next time that I use the brake, and then I sort of have to go through this whole process again.
Yes, yes.
And this has been going on for about a year and a half.
Really?
And you just got around to calling us now.
Well, I'm kind of scared to take it in because
Well, have you found any snakes, first of all? Are there really any snakes under there?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. No, you have a faulty brake vacuum booster.
You certainly do.
The power braking on most cars, with few exceptions, is accomplished by using the natural suction created by the pistons moving up and moving down in the cylinders and creating a vacuum to act on a diaphragm, a rubber diaphragm, which actually multiplies the pressure that you apply to the foot pedal.
And this thing is right in front of you under the hood.
Right.
So when you step
on
the brake,
hear it.
Right, when you step on the brake, you're pushing on a rod, which is pushing on the backside of this diaphragm. And once it gets beyond a certain point, the engine vacuum is pulling this diaphragm forward and, in a sense, multiplying by, you know, tenfold the amount of
pressure of your foot
that you're putting on that brake pedal. And that's what power brakes are all about. But if that diaphragm has a leak in it, when you start to move it, you expose cracks in it, and that's when you hear the hissing.
Right.
And that's why sometimes tapping on the pedal will be just enough to seal up that crack or that seal that's faulty, and the hissing will stop.
So you can go back to your shop, and they won't laugh at you for this.
No, I'm just afraid they're going to make me have to take out a second mortgage.
No.
No, it's just a home equity loan. Yeah, no, it's going to be many hundreds of dollars.
Oh,
you know, but whatever
but do
it is.
It, because one of these days you won't have power brakes.
And it'll seem like you don't have brakes. It'll be
it
like stepping on
a
rock and the car won't stop.
So I probably need to have it looked at.
Yeah, I'd do it
you
tomorrow.
Think? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're probably not going to lose the brakes in that this leak is not likely to get dramatically worse in a hurry. But you've got to fix it sooner or later. And why live with the hissing? You're going to fix it.
I know. I think I'd rather live with $1,000, though.
Oh, you really do? I don't think it's going to be $1,000.
Well, it's been a very long time that this has been going on.
And the whole time you've waited, the price has doubled. If you'd done it a year ago, it was
$250.
Uh-oh. All right. Get on it, Kelly.
All right. Thank you.
See ya. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sarah calling from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Hi, is there an H at the end?
H at the end, yes.
Yippee!
What's up, Sarah?
Well, I'm actually kind of calling about my boyfriend's car.
Yeah.
He has a 2004 Jeep Wrangler, and he loves it, loves it, loves it. And he just bought it recently, and he was picking me up from the train station. I ate a chocolate bar in the car on the way home.
And he had a heart attack.
And No, thank goodness.
Oh.
A piece of the chocolate broke off and melted into his seat. And this is the worst thing that's happened to his Jeep since he's had it. And I feel really bad, so I would like to know how I can get the chocolate out without ruining the upholstery.
These are cloth seats.
Yes.
So the were they light-colored? It's a light-colored seat?
Yeah, it's like a grayish-green.
So the stain is there. Is it really obvious?
Yeah, it's a pretty big spot. It's like an inch wide and about 2 inches long.
Really?
Yeah. Well, apparently, I think what happened is I kind of like was half sitting on it, so I was like spreading out the chocolate as it melted.
Oh, so it must have got all over your clothing as well.
Yeah, it was a big ordeal.
So has this been injurious to your relationship?
Obviously.
You know, a little bit.
A little bit.
It's not that big of a deal, but it's the first thing that's happened to this car since he's had it, and he loves this car so much.
Of course.
Does he love Sarah so much?
That's the question. This is a great test.
This is a great test.
Yeah. If he makes a crazy demand from you, then you'll know that he cares about the vehicle more than you.
That's true. And he didn't ask me to try to get it out. I just took it upon myself to take responsibility for the melted
chocolate. Here's the real test, Sarah. You are going to get yourself the strongest detergent you can find, something like 409 or Fantastic.
Or sulfuric acid.
And a sulfuric acid or something like that. Or straight lye, and get a stiff scrub brush. And brush away at this, and this is going to be a true test of whether or not he likes you, because you're going to wear a hole in the seat about four times bigger than the original stain. And when you do that,
that's my fear.
He's going to have the whole seat replaced.
Right. No, I think that you should ask him what he would like you to do.
Okay.
And he should say, don't worry about it, Sarah. I'll take care of it, or it's not a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you do want to get rid of it, because who knows what's going to... You're going to go climb in there when you're going to some big fancy dance wearing a white gown, and it's going to be all brown in the back.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah. You're going to get it. I mean, if you go to a automotive detailer, they'll get it out.
Okay.
They've got all kinds of stuff to get those kinds of things out.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, I think you're going to get a good read here on the strength of your relationship. No, you really are.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree. I think you hit the nail on the head.
You're going to see if you count for more than the seat. So he originally said, don't worry about it. It's all right.
Yeah.
How long has he been your boyfriend?
4.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, let's hope your tenure outlives Jake's. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
See you, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Oh, boy, oh, boy is right.
Who would think that a little chocolate on the seat?
Oh, doesn't take much more than that.
Better to find out now than later, right?
Absolutely.
All right, it's time for us to take a little break, and then we'll be back with the third half of the show and, of course, the new puzzler.
Hey, speaking of third halves, do you know that we still get one or two letters a week complaining that the expression third half is mathematically incorrect?
We do? That is quite amazing.
You'd think they'd get the joke by now.
No, it's amazing that one or two people still bother writing to us every week.
All right, so what can you tell us about the new puzzler?
Well, it's from my Laws of Physics series, and we'll be back with that and more of your calls in just a minute, so please stick around.
Wait, are these your own Laws of Physics?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll burn the clutch out. Trying to get out of the rut I've been spinning in so long. I burn the clutch out, and when I get out, love.
in my father's eyes. Everything he showed me and everything he told me, he kept his chin up till the day he died. And I burned the clutch out, trying to get out of a rut I've been spinning in so long. I burned the clutch out, and when I get out, Lord, I'll hit the road, man, and I'll be traveling on.
And even though Olympic officials decide to rest the torch on a patch of tall, dry grass outside network headquarters whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.
Ha, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. This is the third half of the show, by the way.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler. And and this, the unobfuscated version of this was sent in by Tom Ireland.
Oh, and you took care of that.
Well,
no apologies.
I took some liberties, you know.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think I may have improved it, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Where I live, there are quite a few hills, many of them very steep. Some of them are quite a challenge for any vehicle, even those that are, quote, high performance. Well, a few of these hills are so steep, in fact, that I often have to ride up the whole way in low gear, especially if I happen to catch a red light at the bottom, like I did the other day, okay?
Yeah.
A few days ago, I found myself going not up one of these hills, but down a long, steep grade.
Yeah.
And I found myself gaining speed at an alarming rate.
Really?
Shifting even into the lowest gear didn't help whatsoever, and I had to apply my brakes almost the entire way down to keep from going so fast that I'd lose control and crash.
Wow.
The brakes got really, really hot, but I was able to stop safely at the red light at the bottom of the hill. Whew. Well, here's the interesting part. There's nothing wrong with my vehicle. Okay?
Yeah.
It's in perfect working order.
Yeah.
So the question is, why did I have to use my brakes to maintain a safe speed going down that hill? And why didn't shifting down even to the lowest gear help slow me down?
Wow.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of an Elgin Pelican three-wheel street and driveway sweeper with a 99-horsepower John Deere engine, 15-foot turning radius, 220-gallon water capacity, and a spacious, vibration-isolated, climate-controlled cab, spacious, mind you, and send it along with a 55-gallon drum of Mr. Clean to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing great. Who's this?
This is Joe calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Joe.
Charlotte.
What's going on in Charlotte? Nice and warm and beautiful like it's supposed to
be?
Oh,
great place, yeah. That's why I moved here. But let me tell you what I got. I have a 96 F-150 pickup.
Uh-huh.
And I bought this pickup for just a work truck to work out of. Body's not in real good shape, but it runs extremely smooth, very quiet. It's got 139,000 miles.
Yeah.
It just sounds like just like my brother. The body's not in good shape, but he's smooth, quiet for the most part, you know.
Well, what happened was it had some pretty old beat-up tires on it, and the guy was taking the left rear tire off on the driver's side, and he said, dude, what's up with this truck? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I looked, and there is a 100-pound propane tank that lays flat under the truck. And when I bought the truck, the owner didn't mention anything about this. And he said, always put regular gasoline in the rear tank.
But
when I opened up the second gas tank, it has a compressed natural gas nozzle there.
No kidding.
Oh.
Yeah. And when I got to looking further, I traced it to the propane tank. Then it leaves the propane tank and runs into a conversion kit in the engine.
Really?
Excellent.
So, and you never know. How long have you had the thing?
Just about 3 months.
So you've only filled up the tank a few times.
Yeah, right when I first got it. That's when I found out we had the tank. But I'm wondering, you know, if we're going to be riding down the road. I don't know anything about this, and it was under my seat. So I didn't know if it was going to go like Kapowie or something. We just explode.
Well, so. I'd wear a football helmet just in case. You never, and maybe a parachute.
No, the football helmet is going to be in the wrong place.
But it does have a switch. Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Does have a, it has a switch in the dash that says GFI or gasoline.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah. So I take it you can run it on either one, but I cannot find anybody in this town. I took it to a couple of propane companies, and they can only tell me when the gas tank is full. They cannot tell me anything on a safety issue.
So where did you buy this truck? I mean,
from an individual.
And where is he at?
He's in Charlotte also, but his phone's been disconnected since then.
Oh, yeah. Well, he might have been doing experiments in his basement. Maybe his phone got disconnected by the explosion.
I traced the vehicle back through a Carfax or something like that. Mm-hmm. And at one point, it was a fleet vehicle.
There you go. So it maybe even before he bought it. So you have one tank on this thing that you cannot refuel. Is that true?
That's right. It is a. It says on the there's a shield covering the tank, and it says CNG, I guess, compressed natural gas.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried to run it a couple times. I would run it about 2 or 3 miles, and I did hear something under the dash, kind of like a hissing noise. You know, like you turn on the gas on your stove at home or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You don't smoke cigars or anything, do you, Joe?
No, I do not. No smoking in this truck.
No, not at all. Well, I think you've got to take it. You've got to find a place that can tell you what kind of a system you have and whether you should be filling this thing with. I'm assuming you're filling it with compressed natural gas, but you know, it sounds to me like it's kind of a homemade, jury-rigged kind of setup.
Well, I did trace the company that sold this system, which is out of Canada, and I called Canada branch, and they no longer service that particular equipment.
The two men even blow up.
So the question is, how does this work anyway? If it's running on gas and regular gas, how's the engine run differently with the natural gas?
Oh, actually, years ago, we drove a couple of vehicles that ran on compressed natural gas.
Yeah.
And basically, what the thing does is when you shut off the liquid fuel that's going through the injectors, it is injecting this compressed natural gas into the engine in place of that. In other words, it has another set of injectors which is shooting in gas that's been fed through a tube from this tank, and it'll burn the compressed natural gas, and it has almost the same combustion characteristics
as
gasoline.
But it probably just burns, of course, a lot cleaner.
I think it does burn cleaner. You know, and the advantage of it is that you can't get it anyplace.
Well, I did find a place here in Charlotte. It was $3.50 a pound, and gas, of course, $3.20 a gallon. So I'm just trying to figure out if it's safe and if it's even worth fooling with.
Well, it's probably safe if it's hooked up right. So it's $3.50 a pound, but a pound of this may have more energy density than a gallon of gasoline. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. That's why I called you guys. I figured
you expected us to
You expected us to have some brains.
Jeez, well.
What a mistake that was.
Well, we have brains. It's just a piece of information isn't in those brains, unfortunately.
But, yeah, because nobody here. I've took it to 3 or 4 places. I've talked to a bunch of mechanics, and they're shocked every time they look at this system. They're like, oh, I've never seen this before. The only time I've seen it's on city buses.
Well, I'm sure there are people listening who know more about this than we do. So we'll ask them to put some stuff on our website.
Yeah, great idea.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It is.
Well, I would like to know the comparison between what are you going to expect to get is insofar as miles per dollar with the compressed natural gas versus gasoline, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's better with the natural gas.
Probably so. Yeah,
but I don't think it's a lot better.
But I was just wondering, you know, if we ran down the road and hit a rock or something, we're just going to blow up, you know.
Well, I know that the one vehicle that we did drive that had compressed natural gas had spun aluminum cylinders, and they were, you know, I think covered in fiberglass or something, and they were pretty high pressure. You know, and this whole issue has been in the news a lot lately because we're talking about fuel cell cars and the possibility of maybe carrying hydrogen gas in our cars at very, very high, you know, high pressures. So mm-hmm. the tanks have to be very well protected and also have to be strong enough to withstand those high pressures that this stuff is pumped in. And I'm not so sure that this, you know, gas tank that you have, does this look like something that would come out of your gas grill? Or
Probably.
Is it a little more sophisticated than that?
No, it looks exactly like what you would put and run like some fireplace, you know, outside.
Jeez, I'd be a little afraid of that in that What if you hit a rock or something, or something in the road?
Well, there is a shield on it. There is a plastic shield that covers it.
Oh, I'm sure that plastic is giving you peace of mind. But I'd be a little afraid of it. I know the vehicle that we drove that had these tanks, the tanks are actually in the trunk.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of out of harm's way. I would, unless you can get some reassurance that this is safe, and I have my doubts that it is, I would just let it run out of gas, in which case it won't be dangerous anymore, and I would just continue using gasoline until you can get satisfied that this thing is installed correctly and it's not a homemade deal and it's safe to operate. And if it isn't any less expensive to run it on the propane, then why bother?
Sounds great. Thanks for taking my call.
See you, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. He's going to blow himself up. Well, you know, there's a here's the temptation. It. He would never have gone out if someone had given him one of these things and said, "Look, I give you this thing, Joe. You got to hook it up." No, he wouldn't be interested. But the fact that it's already there.
It's there,
and he figures it's like
it works.
A gift, and it works.
He's already done it.
Yeah. And I'm just worried that he's going to hit some obstruction in the road or have an accident, and the thing's going to blow up.
No, why should it blow up?
Because that's what happens to things that are under high pressure. They blow up and explode.
Yeah, but this is a propane tank. I mean, you got one in your backyard.
Your gas grill blew up. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. All right. Do you know what time it is?
Time to mulch the lettuce plants growing in the backseat of your car?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we dig up a caller from a previous show, if they're still talking to us, to see how we did.
And who's our lucky player this week?
It's Sarah from New York City. You remember Sarah.
Oh, come on. I mean, New York has like 8 million people. You expect me to remember every Tom, Dick, and Sarah?
All right. Well, I'll remind you. Sarah called us back in December because she has a cabin in upstate New York.
Uh-huh.
And every time she drove her Volvo S80 up there in the rain, she would hear a noise.
Suddenly we hear this. Sound. It goes on and off. We brought it into the dealership about a year and a half ago.
That's a while.
And they said there are dirt roads to get to our house. And they said they found red clay on the fan belt. And they thought that's what was causing it. But we've had it cleaned out, and the car still sings.
Really? So does the singing continue when the car is stopped at a light, for example?
No, stops.
You have to be moving.
Well,
what about revving it up?
Exactly.
I haven't tried that.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to do that.
Because okay.
If in fact you have some foreign matter on the belt.
That so it might really be the red clay?
I don't know. Look, Sarah. We're going with the flow here, you know?
I mean, it's really something, and it's scary.
Do you have a roof rack on this car?
No.
You really should. If you're going up north there, you can carry a lot more stuff, you know, the roof rack.
Yeah, sure.
Jeez.
Wow.
Well, you know, we listened to your show.
Sarah, we have to go. We're expecting Chinese food delivery. It just arrived.
Their timing is always perfect. What are the chances they always arrive with the food right when we can't figure out an answer?
It's great, isn't it? Well, how do we finally get rid of Sarah? I mean, what did we tell her?
Well, we hemmed and hawed, but we finally guessed that she had a missing splash guard that was making the belt slip.
Now, you want to put some money on that?
No.
All right, let's just face the music. Sarah, are you there?
I am here.
Right. Whoa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you all?
We're great, but before you fill us in, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
And is it true that the answer you're about to give has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or by the Best of Heavy Metal CD that we sent you to drown out the noise?
Also true.
Oh,
so, Sarah, did you finally figure out what it was?
I did.
And wasn't
and
a missing
you were
gun?
Wrong.
So you had this howling noise, screeching,
yep.
And what did it turn out? And it had to be, you had to be moving in order to get it. I remember that.
That's true. Well, yeah. We brought it in, and according to the dealer, the center line exhaust bracket was defective.
Oh, really?
Okay, that's what he said. He said it was pushed up, and he said the bracket keeps the exhaust and the drive shaft separate.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So this bracket was rubbing on the drive shaft.
Right, when it's bent, which it's not supposed to be, if fluids get into the drive shaft, there's a propeller there, and it's turning, and it produces a loud screeching noise.
Well, that thing is called a propeller shaft.
That's, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that could well
but
be
that,
it.
But that's, so, that sound is more coming from the middle of the car.
Well, yeah, I guess. But, I mean, to us, it sounded like it was filling up the cabin.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. But I guess I was misunderstood.
I guess.
Yeah, and I misspoke, and I misremembered.
But the funny thing is the guy says that because it was defective, we didn't need to pay for it. But while they had the car in,
they charged you $2,500 for other stuff.
Exactly. $2,500 for other things.
Oh, yeah, they had you. They do. Once they had you in there, $2,500 is about the average repair bill.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And they threw in a new battery, they said.
Oh, that's nice.
They threw it. Oh, that was free?
Free.
And they fixed this little bracket by welding it back in place.
Yep.
They charged you $2,500. They changed your air freshener, and off you went.
And off we went.
Great. What a day for Sarah.
Well, thanks, guys, anyway.
Thanks for playing Stump the Chump, Sarah.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you hear someone you'd like to have torture us on Stump the Chumps, email our mean-spirited producers with your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the subway fugitive, not a slave to fashion, bongo boy, El Putzo Gringo Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the barbarian, and David Gibraltar Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug, the old gray mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the South Shore, fruit du jour, veggie galore, soup by Noor, apple core, and Lipitor, less is more, tasting tour at the health food store is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our rollerblading instructor is Landon McKeister. Our day-old seafood chef is Amelia Luce. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoyts. Our food taster is Howard Dembergers. Our optometric firm is CF Eye Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Louis Dewey, known to the napping construction workers in Harvard Square as Huey Louis Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
Yes, don't drive like my brother. I
don't
said it
drive
first.
Like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 816, along with Car Talk clothing, CDs, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week, Car Talk investigates an in-depth, off-the-record, underground parking garage conversation with a guy we're calling Deep Plaid, an actual plaid pants-wearing car salesman.
Really? What did we learn?
Don't wear plaid with stripes.
Okay. Well, what else did we learn?
Well, he tells us about the secrets he used to control the customer.
Oh, other than stealing his keys and knocking him over the head with a tire iron?
You'll have to read it and find out. An exclusive conversation with Deep Plaid all week at CarTalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR softball team tries to trade us to the History Channel whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.